Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we have tattoo artist, author, singer, producer, writer. Kat Von D is going to join us, tell us some really interesting stuff, some really interesting stories. And we'll do a little Mr. Brightside as well. First, I'll tell you about Geico. Do you own, do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, and then there is your automotive policy. So you take your homeowner's or your renter's insurance, you bundle it up with your automotive policy, you take it all to Geico. Save a ton of dough, save a bunch of time. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around the house. Let's go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could be saving when you get your bundle working at Geico. That is geico.com.
One third of all murder cases in America remain open.
He had told me that if I opened my eyes, he would slit my throat.
Each one is called a cold case.
The DNA evidence taken from the victim was a match. The linen rapist was at it again.
Based on the hit A&E television program.
A phone call is placed, one that changes a family's life forever.
Cold Case Files, the podcast.
If you could see the fire in his eyes, he screamed at me. You want it? Get your tape recorder out.
Get new episodes of Cold Case Files every Tuesday on Podcast One, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere you listen to podcasts.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Brian Whitman. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and Kat Von D calls in. And now, a man who has never been described as a concerned parent. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice to get on. A mandate to get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling the friend that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
Handball, Brian.
Hey, buddy, you got hot foods.
Oh, yeah. We're going to do a little ass crack and back sack in the morning. Everyone's got their rolls cut out, so we'll do that with Brian Whitman as well. He also does Whoopi Goldberg. He's in,
what?
He does some great impressions. And Joy Behar, so it says.
Yeah.
So I'll be curious to see how that one will go.
I had no idea he did Whoopi.
I was talking to my friend Matt the Moderator D'Andrea, who lives in Venice, and I talked to him while he walks around, and he's like, I gotta go around this homeless encampment, and there's a fire and a dumpster, and you know, he lives right in the middle of the whole place. And I was talking to him a couple days ago, and he went, oh, here come the 12 o'clock boys.
Oh yeah.
And a bunch of guys on dirt bikes and quads, ATVs and stuff like that, just sort of wheeling down the street.
Oh, fun.
In a large group.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's got a lot of, we're getting a little shades of Thunderdome.
Very.
Out here, sort of marauding groups,
right,
of outlaws on vehicles that are not approved for street use.
Not street legal.
Not street legal. Now, if you live out here, almost everyone here, I think, I have multiple times pulled over for no front license plate.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
I had to go to the police station to, you know, show I had it strapped on.
Yeah. But as far as the guys and the quads and the dirt bikes,
yeah,
not so much justice
where
for
you put
them.
That?
Empty bags. Mm-hmm. But it's also a logistical thing. So I was like trying to figure it out because the quad and the dirt bike, they don't have a lot of range in the street. You know, it's kind of hard to make it from South Central to Venice Beach on a quad.
True.
Very true. So then the question is are they trailering in?
Oh.
Is there a drop zone?
Interesting.
You know?
Yeah, they're not on the freeway.
Yeah, we got Laguna Seca coming up, the Rolex Historics. We don't drive the cars there. They're all get trailered in, and then once they get in, then you can drive them. So
there are people who are super into like their toys and thus have a toy hauler.
Mm-hmm.
But do these guys seem like this might be their only vehicle?
Yeah, I don't know. We could do rich man, poor man. We should do white man, black man, the quad. Because I guarantee Ted Nugent has covered more ground on a quad than he has in a truck in the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's not really the dominion of the Jew or the or the Asian or even the Hispanic. It's not, you know, it's either you're bow hunting and you're out with Ted or you're 12 o'clock boy. Now, I would call it the 12 o'clock boy because there's a good doc and I've watched it and it's on our Pluto channel on for our chassis TV channel. I think it's 687. I think you can watch it there for free. But it's a
Excuse me.
It's a really good, it's a really interesting doc. It just kind of follows these Chicago inner city kids and they all have these dirt bikes and quads and stuff.
And do tricks and
again, it's we do have an interesting relationship with it, with poverty these days, you know, because the most impoverished people still manage to get them
their hands
on an ATV with some two-stroke fuel in that tank and take it out for some hot laps.
Sure.
Now,
where you choose to spend your money
in now in Chicago, they just do wheelie. No, it was Baltimore's where the show's from. I was in Chicago with Matt the Motorator, famously. A year and a half ago,
just having a quiet brunch,
just sitting out on Lake Street, whatever. When we were at a famous steakhouse, and there was that thing where they pushed everyone outside because of COVID. So we're just standing there, and guys were just doing wheelies down the street, and eventually clip some woman who was stepping off the curb. It could go no other way. If you're going to be on ATVs doing wheelies down the street, there's people walking around and
when everyone's been pushed outside,
trying to have their stakes outside, you're going to clip somebody. So they did that. But it also, again, it speaks to a sort of we've lost control of the city. Because if you have a whole group of people on two-stroke vehicles with no license and no brake lights and no anything.
No regard for passerby.
Off-road vehicles just going up and down the street, wheeling. They do it with impunity because you would have never, I don't know if you guys ever had the mini bike situation as a kid, but at some point I mowed enough lawns and washed enough cars to get hold of this like little Trail 50 mini bike.
Oh, look at you.
And every once in a while we'd try to go out and take it on the street, well, all the time, but it was always a where are the cops? You would never go down Ventura Boulevard on one. You'd be immediately arrested. It was like, we'll take this side street and then we'll go down that side street. And then there's a little time when you have to go up on Laurel Canyon. We'll just push them. We'll just push them on Laurel Canyon. Then we'll hop back on and go back on the side street.
Otherwise, you just go up and down Kling all day.
Right, Kling Street. It's funny, my friend Chris, who had the other Trail 50 that his dad got him, did live on Kling Street.
Of course he did.
In North Hollywood. But as I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, we got 12 o'clock boys now, which is kind of a...
We made it.
Yeah, it's a
feather in the cap.
It's one of those... it's a marker. It's sort of like if your city has 12 o'clock boys, then you've probably lost control of the city. And Chicago, Baltimore, now Los Angeles, or Venice Beach at least, has 12 o'clock boys. But also, Chris has been sitting on this, but I think there was that horrible situation. It was about 2 weeks ago. A young couple out like celebrating Puerto Rican Day parade or something. They backed into somebody. They're in the wrong neighborhood. They both got pulled out of the car and then they got executed. Did you guys remember that story?
I don't remember that.
It was in Chicago. It's everyone's worst nightmare. You're driving with your wife or your girlfriend or whatever. Next thing you know, you take a wrong turn and you back into somebody. And next thing you know, a mob is pulling you out of your car.
The premise of your starring debut in Judgment Night.
That's right. And the guy was literally they just executed him. They just on the street, you know, laying on the ground, bullet to the head. But
and his girlfriend.
And his girlfriend were executed. But in the background was an ATV.
Oh.
I noticed. So it was like the quad runner. I do like
hypervigilant.
We do have a new version of society where one guy's the executioner and then the next guy works for the documentary film crew that is watching him execute people.
Screams like, world star hip hop.
I'll just stand back with my iPhone and film you executing this innocent couple on the street.
But click involved for artistic reasons.
This is the new change a light bulb joke. You know, like one to change it and two to, you know, take a video of it.
Right. So anyway, it just made me think, oh, we got the 12 o'clock boys are our thing. And so if you live in a city and you have 12 o'clock boys, I think it's time to take a good look in the mirror. Venice has them now. I don't know. You know, like Beverly Hills wouldn't tolerate it.
Probably not.
Probably Encino, maybe Studio City probably wouldn't do it. But Venice, the word has gotten out that if you want to go to Venice Beach, California, and do your thing, you may do your thing there.
Yes. And there was a, you know, that Instagram account, Street People of Los Angeles, the one from today is people pulling up with out-of-state plates and literally taking everything out of the car and going to set up camp on the beach, like as the new home. So
yes,
you are right about that. My question about the 12 o'clock boys, because I haven't seen the doc, are they more in the like lovable scamp category or like dangerous category?
They're like, you're rooting for them in the sense that they're a bunch of 9-year-old,
right,
7-year-old, 11-year-old, like inner city, you know, Baltimore kids. And of course, when you do a doc, you get to know the subject, sure, of the doc. And it's like, oh, she's got a mom. She's horrible. Never knew his dad. You know, he's got to take to the streets. But what ends up happening is they would end up doing like wheelies around cop cars and kicking in the door and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the cops couldn't pursue them because if the cops pursued them and they got into an accident, no one's wearing helmets or right, anything, then the cops would be at fault,
right,
and prosecuted for chasing the
totally
guys on the motorcycle.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's totally logical. And it's funny, one cop did pursue somebody once and the kid did kill himself on the bike, and they all went after the cop,
yeah,
obviously, because that's the New World Order. The other thing, Kat Von D is going to zoom in a moment. Tattoo artist and model and entrepreneur, now recording artist. So we'll talk to her in a second.
And
but
you know,
speaking of recording, yes,
you know, I dressed up as her for Halloween one year.
Oh, yeah.
You want to see that picture?
No.
Oh.
Yes. Wow.
Yeah.
Gina, not bad.
Thank you.
Is that some sort of cultural appropriation?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think that was a thing when, yeah, I did this. It was like 7 years ago.
You're appropriating trash culture.
How dare you?
I was working on my book with Mike Lynch yesterday, and someone had a question about cultural appropriation, and we all know a couple of white chicks can't open a taco truck. Not in Portland. No, that's cultural,
right,
appropriation.
Sure,
but it's funny, our relationship with cultural appropriation, which is serving the food of some land you don't hail from is considered that, or dressing up as Speedy Gonzalez or something. That's all no-fly zone. But if you really think about it, the ultimate cultural appropriation is marrying. You know, it's a mixed couple, mm-hmm, and your kid is going to be mixed. That you've appropriated that culture,
yeah,
both directions.
Right.
We applaud that.
Yes.
So the same group that is against the taco trucks for cultural appropriation is all in on a mixed marriage, which is, to me, a ultimate form of cultural appropriation. But I said to Lynch, I started to think about it. I said, I don't know what this thing is. Like, we're going to divide everyone. You're in this group. This is your sexuality. This is your heritage. This is who you pray to. This is where you hail from. We have the Latinx over here and the Black Lives Matters over there. And we have all the different groups. I said, you know, the place that has the most groups that is still completely segregated, fucking prison. The prison yard is the ultimate realization,
yeah,
of the Chicanos got to stay with the Chicanos,
right,
and the Aryan race guys.
Yep.
They got to stay over there. And the black guys, you stay over there.
They got dialed in.
Yeah.
So
are we happy with that?
Well, that's kind of my thing with anything that has to do with socialism. Like, we have Cuba, we have places, we have Russia. That's what it is. Is that something you want to head toward? Like, is that like the conceit is sort of like, well, we don't want to get there, but we'd like to get halfway there. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know, maybe we should go the other direction.
Yeah. Google Cuba protest and see what comes up lately. These people want out.
They want out. So anyway, I thought the prison yard being the ultimate segregated place on this planet. I mean, the only sort of tolerated, uh-huh, I guess, or sanctioned, you know.
Certainly encouraged,
yes,
and approved.
Well, when you enter,
like the guards aren't saying, like, all right, you guys, let's get together and mix,
right,
it up.
No. All right. Now, speaking of music and Kat Von D, mm-hmm, I had a thought. I always have these old guy thoughts, and they're not thoughts of an old man, but
no,
they're thoughts that make you old.
they're
and
both.
They're both. Which is, I was thinking of the Beach Boys' Kokomo.
Oh, yeah.
Song.
What a slapping classic.
From 1988. Well, anytime you can get Stamos on the Congos, you got a hit.
There's nothing wrong
with
cultural
this. Appropriation.
Right. Now, in my world, obviously growing up many years ago, the Beach Boys were a big thing and had all those hits. And then they took forever off, and then they came back with Kokomo, 1988, number one. So I said to Chris, what was the Beach Boys' last number one hit before?
Oh, God.
So... Early anyone 70? Want to guess?
God only knows.
No, earlier than I thought.
Oh, I was going to say 1970. No, it's not God only knows because that's from Pet Sounds. I'd have to throw it out there. Sloop John B or something?
No, it was, or if you want to venture a guess, Gina, you can.
Of the year?
Of the song.
I'll give a year. 1967.
Way off, 66.
Oh wow.
Shit.
I thought they may have got a number one hit. Now, they've had hits, but I just said number one hit. So between Good Vibrations, 1966, last number one hit, and Kokomo, the 22 years.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But
don't call
get
it
ready
combat.
To feel old between Kokomo and now.
Many more years.
33 years.
This is for the Cocktail soundtrack.
That's right.
That's right.
The great and Tom Cruise.
Also a Frankensteinian version of the Beach Boys. Brian Wilson not involved. He, of course, the creative genius. Mm. This was Mike Love, and I'm sure Al Jardine was probably there.
How'd you know what band Mike Love was in?
Wild guess. It imprinted my mind for some reason.
Tool tune, bad song, guilty pleasure.
Guilty
where we
pleasure.
At?
It's catchy. I mean, it's a hit for a reason, but the song is not good.
No, not good, but...
Although I think Dawson, just as a fuck you to society, would play this with the windows down.
In this case, you're wrong, my dear.
Oh, wow.
This is a pile of shit. It's a bad song.
But more than a decade, we are more than a decade further away right now from this number one hit than Kokomo was from their last number one hit, which, again, just felt like a lifetime.
Yeah,
my lifetime's like
ago.
It was like from the time I was newborn to the time I was on a construction site.
You guys are probably aware of this, but the Beach Boys hugely influential on the Beatles. There would be no Sgt. Pepper if it wasn't for Pet Sounds. Like Paul McCartney, like, this is the greatest thing I've heard.
Yeah. Gotta give him some credit.
But hugely influential.
Why is Brian Wilson still alive?
Why?
Well,
it's a big question.
Play yourself.
People die all the time. I know it's not a great argument, but...
He had a rough go of it.
Why is Keith Richards still alive?
It's a good point. Like, I just feel like he was, like, morbidly obese. He was strung out on drugs.
He
didn't get out of bed, Like, shouldn't he have just sort of had the ticker?
Perished.
Just sort of... had a major heart attack when he was 68 or something.
God, he's lived a tough life. His dad was abusive. The dad who obviously, Carl Wilson, Dennis Wilson, his dad would, as a punishment, box his ears. You know what I mean? Like that's
yeah.
Great for a musician.
He's deaf in one ear and always has been. It was amazing because he pioneered the stereo sound.
Yeah. It's
ironic.
Yeah, ironic. And who are these dads? And by the way, the ear boxing sounds funny. It's rough if you've ever had it.
If you have an older brother, I've experienced it many times. It sucks.
Yes.
You know what else they do? Hmm. Well, I wonder if his father did this. And when you get braces, my brother would pin me down and rub my cheeks together because the braces hurt so bad. Yeah, it's a good one.
I just like how cruel kids were.
And then pin my shoulders down and just tap my clavicle as hard as he can for as long as he can.
Titty twisters, Indian burns, all that stuff, hand over your face, smack it, a Hertz donut.
Yeah.
It was all there.
Yeah.
Dennis Wilson, hugely involved with the Manson family.
Yeah.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
I was a big Beach Boys fan, Beatles fan. Yeah. I did a lot of deep dives back in the day.
Is when you say hugely involved, I know like they stayed at his house and stuff.
I mean, he recorded songs with that.
Yeah.
I say hugely in as much as anyone could be hugely involved with a cult who is a pop star, but I mean,
on the cult side.
Yeah, he recorded, he hung out a lot.
Yeah, but he didn't go on like murder sprees,
at a certain point, he drew the line, but he recorded songs with them, hung out at the ranch a lot. I think Chris might have to verify this, but I think he invited budding musician Charles Manson around to the Beach Boys. And I think the reaction was not good from the Beach Boys side. It was like, who the fuck? This guy's insane.
Well, it is
which
good.
He was.
Now, if you're the other members of the Beach Boys, you'd think it wouldn't be good. Mm. But big picture, it would be good.
How so?
Because several years after you were introduced to Charles Manson and Tate and LaBianca and the murders and that insanity and all the Helter Skelter written in blood and everything like that, several years later, when the Beach, was it Love or was it the, who was the Manson friend?
Dennis Wilson.
Dennis Wilson. At some point later on, Dennis Wilson would go, hey, man. I met this Calypso band. These guys are out of sight. Oh, sure.
Yeah,
as good as...
Just like Charlie.
No, I just want him to sit in.
Oh, sure.
Oh,
well, you guys got to hear my friend Charlie's songs. Oh, boy.
Yeah, I mean, you would get a free... When that guy is Charles Manson... Now, we all have versions of that. Like, oh, that dude... No, that dude got drunk and he got sick on himself at the party. We're not inviting any more of your friends to party. But Charles Manson...
That sets the bar very high.
No more...
No coming back from
no
that.
More dude. You met over at Musso and Frank's that you can come hang out and jam with us anymore. That's a no.
You don't get it. He lives on a ranch.
That's right.
Dawson, did this come up in your Dark Side book?
Yes, it is in there. He fancied himself a songwriter, so he submitted songs to the Beach Boys and to the Beatles. And then, you know, he did hang around the Beach Boys very briefly, and they all figured out he's a weirdo. And, you know, when they heard his demos, they're like, you're a weirdo. But that's all it took.
They weren't great songs.
Kat Von D is on line one. Kat?
Hey, how are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Speaking of music, you got an album out called Love Made Me Do It. I will pay you a compliment. I've not heard the single yet, but... I talked to, but you know, when people are known for acting or tattooing and acting or modeling or whatever, and then they release an album, there can be a little eye roll there.
And of course.
I said to my producer, I said, what's Kat plugging? She's got music. And I said, oh boy, how's that? And he went, it's really good. Yeah. So
I heard the single. It's very atmospheric, very, it's got a real vibe to it. I like it.
Thank you. Well, I mean, I don't blame you. I mean, I've seen like so many actors and release music and it's terrible. And it's like, most of the time I feel like, oh, you're just playing the part and you don't really care about the music or, you know, it's just, you're just playing another role. And, but I think, you know, a lot of people know me for tattooing and for makeup and stuff like that, but I've been actually playing piano and, was like classically trained to play music since I was 5 years old. So music has always been like my first and foremost biggest passion. So, but I totally get it. I would eye roll at me too.
So, what's life like, for you now? I mean, God, there's been so many years have, passed, but you've, obviously people know you from, do you have the Guinness Book of World Records for most tattoos in what, 24 hour period?
Yeah, I set the Guinness Book World of Records, and then my jerk ex-husband like broke it the next day because he has the Napoleon syndrome.
Then you set the record for fastest divorce.
Yeah. Yes.
Wait, who was your jerk ex-husband at the time?
Oh, I would. I hate to even be in the same sentence with him. It's like appalling, but. But you know, I laugh because basically there's only one person that can ever set it, and can't change that. So I think a few people have broken the record since as well. But yeah, I did 400 tattoos in 24 hours. So I averaged one tattoo every 2.8 minutes.
Damn.
Do they, couple things, feel like it'd be hard to find people to get in that line?
Yeah, you have
a
big supply.
No. We had, I think, 3,000 people in line.
Yeah, to be tattooed by Kat Von D, the line would be down the block.
Effort. But to me, those are tough. Yeah.
But, you know, it was also a charity, so I think people were excited to, like, give to the cause and all that good stuff. So, yeah, but it was a fun experience I'll never do again, but yeah.
I'm wearing at least three of Kat Von D's different makeup right now.
Really?
Awesome.
I cannot tell you. Between the lock, like the tattoo lock foundation, I'm wearing the eyeliner and the mascara. I have everything. I have the eyeshadow palette. It is seriously, I go through a lot of makeup. You know, we're girls. We try everything.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Kat, this comes up on most shows. So the audience is familiar with this.
No, this is like, you really do. The makeup line is incredible.
Oh,
and we're so, you know, me and everyone I know, so grateful that it's out there.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. I mean, I sold the makeup line about a year and a half ago, but...
Well, I hope you made a shit ton because it's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, I'm really proud of my formulas. They are absolutely the best, to be honest. But I'm glad you like them.
Your background is pretty diverse and pretty interesting. Can we get into that?
Yeah, of course.
You got your first tattoo at 14. You quit school at 16 to become a tattoo artist. And... is there a difference between being an artist and being a tattoo artist? I mean, is it the same gene? I mean, you have to be able to draw, right?
Or I mean, there are some tattooers that don't draw very well. I mean, you know, they could just trace things all day. But yeah, I do believe that like the best tattooers or the greater ones are always going to have an art, like a background in art. You know, a lot of them have like fine art degrees, and surprisingly nowadays, I mean, back when I first started tattooing, it was just a bunch of gnarly bikers, so times have definitely changed. Now it's like a lot of hipsters tattooing. But yeah, I think intuitively there you should have some kind of artistic background.
Are there any famous tattoo artists who don't have tattoos?
Yeah, and I think they get a lot of criticism within like the tattoo industry, which I have separated myself pretty much ever since I started when I was filming the TV show. But but yeah, you know, I think it's the whole like don't trust a skinny chef thing, and I get where that criticism comes, because I feel like as a tattooer, like being able to understand what someone's feeling when you're tattooing them, like pain wise and all that stuff, it really does help you understand the process a little bit more. So I mean, there's that aspect of it, and but yeah.
What's the most painful part of your body to get the tattoo on?
People ask that all the time, and I think they assume if it's like a fatty area, like your butt or something, that it's not going to hurt. But it actually has to do more with like your nervous system. So like the base of your spine has like clusters of nerves everywhere. So like your butt is actually like a super painful place to get tattooed.
So the tramp stampers are heroes? Did... oh God, I got 1,000 tattoo questions. There must be tattoo requests that you couldn't realize. You know, someone with a swastika on their forehead or something.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think anything that goes against my morals, I obviously am not, I'll never tattoo that, like no racist stuff but then there's also stuff that I think that, like as a tattooer, it's kind of your responsibility to guide people into getting something that they're not going to regret. So there has been times where I have passed up things that, you know, a girl comes in crying because her boyfriend dumped her and she wants to get his name on her neck. I'll usually pass on that kind of stuff. Like, I don't want to,
unless she has
cash. I don't want her to wake up the next day.
You were sent to Provo Canyon School in Utah for 6 months at the age of 15. That's the one that Paris Hilton sort of famously saying was abusive.
Yeah, that's,
Did you find it?
Yeah, that's how we actually met each other through that whole process. I didn't know she was there because I think I was there before she was.
You guys are, right about the same age. I think maybe.
Yeah. She probably went earlier.
39 and she's 40. Did you experience any of that abuse that she spoke of?
Oh, yeah. Worse. I watched the documentary and it was really crazy because I thought through years of therapy that I had already processed a lot of that stuff, but seeing, you know, they didn't allow you to have cameras in there. So seeing her documentary, how they illustrated certain scenarios, like the padded cell room without the pads, like that just brought back so many memories that I totally completely forgot about. But I've made peace with all that stuff. I just can't believe that places like that are still open. And now I guess they're, you know, enrolling children. I believe the last time I checked, like they're enrolling 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds, which is really, really insanely crazy. But yeah, it's pretty wild. I made a video about it on my Instagram a while ago, and it was really sad to see how many other people had been put into the same program, if not similar, throughout the country. There's a ton of them.
Did you get sent there for a reason?
Yeah, you know, I think my parents, you know, we weren't born here in the USA. My parents are from South America, and we were born in Mexico. And I just think they weren't prepared to deal with, like, anything really, like, Americanized pop culture, especially the tattooing thing really freaked them out. And I understood that, but I just think they went about it the wrong way, you know? I think, you know, sending somebody to a program like that to change, you know, what they're into is just kind of, I feel like we could have solved it with a conversation, but you know, I don't blame them. It's not like these programs tell the parents what they're going to do. They actually restrict you from having any outside conversations. So I was trapped in there for 6 months. I didn't see the sun for 6 months. No access to a phone. When you were talking to your parents, it was very closely monitored. So if you started saying anything, they would just hang up.
So they literally didn't let you outside for 6 months?
Yeah, 6 months. And there was no windows. You know, if you go on their website, they show you this front of what looks like a school, and they even have, like, prop school buses, which, of course, you never use. None of that was actually part of the facility. The facility's in the back, and it was just, like, you know, cement walls that you can't see outside.
What is their business model? I mean,
oh, it's terror. Insane. I mean, we were already very pretty poor, and you know, I remember my parents put their house on the loan to pay for this, and you know, when you have, like, therapists and people telling you this is the only way to fix your child, you know, it's really sad how they really prey on scared parents. It's really a shame. I mean, there was people in there that had it a lot worse than I did, over-medicating and things like that. I know there was a lot of abuse, like rape and molestation, and I didn't get messed with that way, but you definitely saw it, and it's pretty brutal.
It just, I'm not really kidding when I'm like, what's the business model? Like, it seems weird that this is your business.
Well, I guess they would psychologically and emotionally break these girls down, and then they return them to their family. Like, look, your daughter's cured.
I do, but so many of these families,
they actually make you stay there as long as possible and milk your parents for all the money that they can possibly get. And that was, like, a lot of people just ran out of money and would get discharged. But I remember there was a girl in there for a couple years, you know, and they just, you know, they give these reports to your parents and make it sound like you're a psychotic person that needs more help and yada, yada, yada. And I just quickly learned how to lie my way out. Like, I was like, okay, here's the program. I just have to give them what they want. And it actually gave me more psychotic issues once I got out. There's definitely, like, a lot of just trauma, I think. You know, they wouldn't let you use the restroom unsupervised, so there's no doors on any of the toilets, like the toilet rooms and stuff, and a counselor has to watch you go to the bathroom, pretty much. So I remember the first time when I got out, going to the bathroom was really scary to me. I was like, am I going to get sent back if I close this door? You know, just crazy things like that.
Provo Canyon School is still in business?
That's the question. How, after all of this comes out?
There are other schools like that. I mean, this isn't just one isolated place. I mean, it's a coincidence that Paris and I were at the same place. But there's documentaries about tons of other schools that are even gnarlier. So it's pretty wild. It's crazy because if you go to the Yelp reviews, it's just one testimonial after another of, like, the worst stories ever. And, you know, I can't understand why any parent now with the internet, you know, when I got sent there wasn't the internet. So it wasn't like my parents could really research, but now I just don't know how anybody would send their kid there with, you know, if they cared.
Ryan.
I was going to say, Adam, you got a 14-year-old daughter.
That's right.
Who needs in need of some schooling? It's been person maskless schooling.
Oh.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't do it, but obviously the threat of doing it.
Oh, yeah. It's on the table.
Well, and the way you talk about it, and, you know, what we know today about all of this stuff, it feels like it's right up there with, like, gay conversion camp. You know, you just wouldn't do this.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Brian.
Trust me.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was really crazy. Like, I'll give you an example that was one of the most extreme things that I experienced. and I don't want to be a Debbie Downer on your episode, but so too my late. Parents were really, they were terrified that I was tattooing, that I was getting tattooed. And, you know, I was underage. I totally, totally understand why. But, so when they took me into the school, you know, these counselors or these people, I wouldn't even call them counselors, to be honest, because none of these people are qualified. They're just, a network of friends of that just overlook people. And it's really awful. But, so basically my parents said, hey, we don't want her to tattoo anymore. Like, we need to deprogram that part, you know? And so they took like blood work and like a stool test and a piss test. And then later on, and mind you, I turned 16 in there. So I was 15 when I was enrolled. They told me that I had, my blood work came back as HIV positive.
Oh, Jesus.
And,
oh, yeah, to get and, you and, not to do it.
And they said, no, I'm not HIV positive.
No, I mean, but to get you not to
completely illegal. Like, wow. Like, how could anybody do that? And and the crazier part about it is that when I got discharged, I never got a just kidding note. Like, I went out into the world thinking there was something wrong with me until I went and got tested myself, and there was nothing wrong with me. And it was just like, wow. Weird scare tactics are how there's no way that can be legal. And I carried that for that entire half a year.
Yeah, pretty, and pretty also, brutal. I mean, you know, HIV positive used to be a death sentence.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So that can mess with your mind. Well, speaking of all this craziness, you have any thoughts on Britney Spears? Because that's all in the news, and it's, you know, kind of part and parcel to this.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I was a bit more informed on it. I've just heard here and there and seen a few headlines, and but I can't imagine like life with having anybody have that type of power over you. But it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, is there something being done to fix it?
Yeah, well, that's the news today.
Oh, we got it in the news, so we'll tease it.
She has some very good news, and she's very awesome. Happy. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, my feeling in general with everything that has to do with either Britney Spears or the state of California, everything shouldn't be predicated on whether you have money or not. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Laws and rules. Sure. And I've always said, I don't like this thing where, like, if you're an empty bag, well, the cops will leave you alone because what are they going to do? You don't have any money. But if you have money, then they're going after you. They're going to want, the state wants checks to be cut. And I feel the same way about Britney Spears. Like, if she was just some flunky white trash chick who worked at a Costco, then no one would give a shit and the parents wouldn't be involved and nobody would be. The fact that so many people are sucking at the teat of Britney Spears and so many people are getting paid. I was talking to Mark Garagos' attorney yesterday about it. They brought in her lawyers like billable hours.
Yes.
It was insane.
It's just charge it to Britney. Yeah.
And they even, you think, ironically, there was like a cease and desist that was ordered for her or someone in her camp that she had to pay for.
Exactly.
She had to pay the lawyers to put that together.
Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously insane. And would never happen if we're just talking about someone we went to high school with who had themselves a job at McDonald's.
Right.
So I don't like the two standards, that you have money, here's how we're going to treat you, or here's how the law will apply to you versus you don't have any money, so the law doesn't really
nothing to see
apply.
Here.
I don't like the double standard. Kat, let me give you a plug. Album Love Made Me Do It. It's available August 27th, but the newest single, I Am Nothing, is available today, so you can find that. Kat Von D, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, real quick, before I leave, I just want to say, Adam, I love all the videos that you've done with PragerU, man. I think it's amazing. I love your message.
Oh, thanks. PragerU is a good place, a good guy, and if people want to get a little bite-sized five-minute tutorial on any subject, they can go over to PragerU. So thanks for enjoying that,
awesome.
Kat.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye.
Take care,
thank
baby.
You.
All right. Let me tell you about stamps.com. Things are getting back to normal. Live music. Yeah, tell that to Garth Brooks, man.
Mm-hmm.
Going to a movie, going to the post office. We'll skip the post office. Go with stamps.com. Mail and ship anytime, anywhere, right from your computer. I've used stamps.com here for 11 years, maybe coming on to 12 years now. Merch, books, paperwork. You can buy and print official U.S. postage, any letter, any package, any class of mail, 24/7 at home, up to 40% off of post office rates, and up to 66% off UPS shipping rates. Switch and save feature. Quickly compare carriers and find the best rates every time. And they got a no-risk offer, 4-week trial, plus free postage, and the digital scale, which we always use. I think it goes up to about 80 pounds. No long-term commitment. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone, top of the homepage, and type in Adam at stamps.com. Enter Adam. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll do Mr. Brightside right after this. Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know. It's hard work out there, owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, just checked into an older casino in Pahrump, Nevada. Got into my room, and through the adjoining door, I can hear the chirp of a smoke alarm every 27 seconds. Went to the front desk, asked them to please stop it. 2 hours later, still going. I'm going to kick the door in, and I'm going to rip it out of the ceiling. Anyway, mahalo.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Yeah, man, those smoke detectors. And so I would watch a endless loop of people attacking smoke detectors once they've had enough. You know what I mean? Because what it is, you go from 0 to 60 in 2.7 seconds. Yeah. So you sit and endure it for a long time, and then at some point,
you snap.
You try to get it, but you can't get to it. Wasn't and that's where the broomstick comes in.
Wasn't there a full Friends episode dedicated to this, that they couldn't kill it no matter what they did? It kept going?
I've literally had them or put them underwater trying to kill them.
And still no?
No.
Wow.
Counter argument, this guy's at a casino in Pahrump. You should be lucky there are smoke detectors.
Right. That's a good point.
Yeah, what's the bright side of that?
Oh, my God. I filmed...
You get to leave eventually?
I filmed Top Gear out there, and we stayed in Pahrump in the casino, and it's like amongst the most depressing places I've ever been in. They gave me the Ambassador Suite from 1972 that had the sunken tub with the shag carpet around it and stuff.
Pahrump is the noise you make when you go to Pahrump.
Yes.
When you find out you have to go.
Yeah. Oh, my God. All right. We have Mr. Brightside, brought to you by Ultimate Ears, by the way.
Life got you down? Can't catch a break? Thinking about ending it all? Well, don't. Let Adam turn your frown upside down. It's time for Mr. Brightside.
All right. Let's, because Vinny was in here yesterday, let's talk to Lewis. Yes, North Carolina, I'm going Lewis.
Irwindale, Lewis.
Oh, Lewis from Irwindale. Right. Yeah, he always crosses me up because if you're from Irwindale, you're Lewis. If you're from North Carolina, you're Lewis.
Right.
But you went from Irwindale to North Carolina. Are you going to come out and see us this weekend?
I'm actually visiting LA again. I'm leaving tomorrow, I can't see you there.
All right. Well, you'll be there in spirit. So what's your bright side question?
Well, I was doing Tortorich really good. I dropped 100 pounds.
Wow.
Best, of my life over COVID. I know Adam says not to blame anybody else, but myself, internalized, so I gained about 60 pounds.
Oh, definitely internalized.
Mm-hmm. So during COVID, you started eating again.
Yep.
What was the big slip? I've found with me, when I'm doing good, I go to bed. When I'm doing bad, I just have this craving for chunky peanut butter at like 12 a.m. Like I like
big
just
spoon.
Watching Sports Center, yes. I just want a big glob of peanut butter. I just crave it. What did
That's
what did you in, Luis?
Beer and a bunch of parties I've been going to. They invite me to places, me and my family, that moved here, and they get together a lot, and they just have a whole mess of food, a whole bunch of beer, and it's just my willpower is not there, and I don't have the routine I had back when I lost the weight.
All right. Well, let me go bright side on you. First off, you're the toast of the town. I mean, you're being invited to all these parties.
You should be so lucky.
Most people pack on weight because their dog died and their girlfriend left them. And
a pint of Haagen-Dazs.
The boss told them to stay home during COVID, and now they're just sitting home crying into the Haagen-Dazs. Right. But you're packing on weight like Roberto Duran packed on weight after he beat Sugar Ray Leonard.
Living the life.
I'm fucking nailing whores and traveling and boozing it up.
You're the man of the hour.
I'm invited
every hour.
To every cocktail party. So it's really, you could look down and see an ever-growing gun, or you could see your expanding popularity. Mm-hmm. That's what I would see if I looked in the mirror. The fact that
you're a sought-after party guest.
Yes. How does this work? You go from Irwindale to North Carolina. How? Why are you on everyone's short list of party goers?
Better ribs.
Oh, it's because you make great guacamole. You do guacamole, right?
Uh-huh.
Oh, if you make killer guacamole, then you'll get invited to every party.
Sure. Do you have a secret? Would you be willing to share your recipe?
If you can keep it, I might, but... I'd have to ask my wife first.
Off the air. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
No problem.
Yeah. I think it's garlic powder.
Yeah. What's one thing you put in there that maybe someone else doesn't?
Crisco.
Fresh avocados. You got to know what avocados to pick. You got to pick the right amount of onions.
This is breaking. I'm going to leave the news.
What was that word you said that started with an A to make guacamole?
I think it was avocado.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Avocado, and then we might add a little bit of diced this spice.
Mm-hmm. Dawson's pants are down.
Avocado.
It's really,
Avocado and
what's,
spice.
What's the key to your famous mac and cheese? Is it the mac?
Or the cheese?
Part of the cheese part. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I would also argue now that he's morbidly obese again, the secret ingredient is brow sweat. You know, just sitting over there with this mortar and pestle mashing
nice
things
umami,
away.
Yeah.
High smoke point.
habanero sauce. Habanero pepper.
Oh, you're talking.
Just a tiny bit of that.
Okay. All right. Well, look, you went down 100, so you know how it's done. You've climbed the mountain before. You've done it before. Also, guac is good when you're on the diet. The good news is with guac is, you know, you could pretty much, good guac, you could put on a flip-flop and it's good. You don't need the corn chips, you know. You can get
the
cheese crisps.
Or veggies. Or cucumbers.
Cucumbers.
Bell pepper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
We're scooping.
How do I get the fire in the belly again? The motivation?
Jalapeno sauce.
That's what I'm losing now.
Well.
Can I just say one thing? You know, every single person always says this about a diet. The good news is I lost a bunch of weight. The bad news, I gained it all back and more. Remember, you are only about halfway of what you gained. You lost
That's
100,
true.
You gained 60. So don't despair. Don't eat to feel better when you haven't done all the damage that so many other people have. You're very close to getting back where you need to be. Overwhelm yourself.
I am.
All right, you
Good
got
point,
it.
Thank you.
Stick with the guac, spread them on the bell pepper, the cucumber, the cheese crisps, and you're only a little past halfway. You didn't do what Gina said happens to most. So you've caught yourself. You've climbed that mountain before. It's time to embark on your next journey.
And easy on the beer.
And easy on the beer.
Mm-hmm.
Cerveza.
Well said.
Thanks, Louis.
Thank you, guys.
All right, let's see. Let's talk to someone's got a situation with an engagement being broken off.
That's brutal.
Steve?
Hello, Adam.
38, Raleigh, North Carolina. Coming out to the show?
I am.
Oh, good. What show are you coming to?
I have tickets to the Friday night 10 o'clock show. I would love to pull balls if that's still available, but...
I don't know if we've got all of them. Oh, it's available, Chris says. To which show?
Late show.
Friday, 10 o'clock.
Do we need a ball puller?
Oh, we could do that.
All right. You can do that, you single successful
Chris.
Guy. Yeah, we can do that.
From on high.
You're making me feel better already, Adam.
Yeah, what happened with the engagement broken off?
Okay, I'll give you the Cliff Notes version of the story because it's a long one. But the long and short was about 2 weeks before the wedding date, a girl that I had had a fling with on a work trip probably about a year prior, but while I was with my ex, reached out to her and to inform her because she found our wedding registry online.
Found.
Yeah. And so I tried everything I could to kind of to reconcile and you know, explain the situation and that, you know, that was in the past. It was before we were getting engaged, any of that stuff. And she just, you know, she's one of, and there's nothing wrong with this, but one of the people where just cheating is just the bottom line for her. And since there was any form of cheating, that was something that she was not going to be able to recover from. So,
well, let me soften the blow. And, yeah. Let me soften the blow.
2 weeks
before. She wasn't really that into you.
She's looking for an out.
Yeah, she's looking
Thank
for
God.
An out because she says everyone has their rules. You know what I mean? Like I, you know, it's like famously we always talk about those chicks and guys, women too. They're always like, I'm just too busy with work right now to be in a relationship, really.
I got to focus on me.
Just tell me a guy you like, and yeah. I bet if that guy wanted to take you out on Saturday night, you wouldn't have to be
work.
In the office on Saturday night.
Yes.
Like, you could figure it out. This happened a year ago. You weren't engaged. I get it. It's, you know, it's no feather in anyone's cap, but if she really wanted to keep going, she definitely would have.
Yeah, there's a way back in.
So
yeah,
I feel
she was,
like
she was really on the fence there for about a week. And had we had a little more time, I think, to like really kind of sort through the kind of initial knee-jerk reaction, I think things could have been a little bit different. But as soon as, you know, we had to make a decision in, you know, days to figure out if we were calling off this wedding because we had guests and things like that were coming, family members. And so I think the accelerated timeline, but I definitely do think that you're on to something there. That,
well,
I'm going to
extrapolate it a little bit. First off, you got to call everyone or tell everyone the wedding's off. Well, did they accept your excuse of rolled an ankle or you plowing a coworker at a Red Roof Inn 14 months earlier?
Steve, what happened?
Rolled an ankle.
Well, you can't limp
down
the aisle.
Bring a chair up on the...
You can sit in the altar.
Yeah. Did you have to get into the nuts and the bolts of why it was called off?
You know, at that point in time, I was grasping at straws, so I was very honest with everyone. I now regret that a bit, but you know, I was trying to own my mistake as best I could.
Now, but here's the bright side. I do believe people do what they want versus here's my policy. You know, no cheaters, zero tolerance for cheaters, and women especially can move around the rules, break the rules, have I don't do this, but I do that. They're totally flexible. She was sort of had one foot out of this. If I pumped her full of sodium pentothal, which no one uses anymore, I could have gotten her to admit before she found out this news that she was 60-40 split on the marriage, which means the divorce would have happened 2.5 years into the marriage shortly after the birth of your first daughter.
Yeah, that would have been devastating.
Right.
Steve? I think that's a great point. And I don't know if telling myself that makes me feel any better or not, but I think it's a very good point.
And by the way, we have a new leader in the clubhouse for the absolute worst just thought you should know person.
Oh, I hate the that just
bitch.
Thought you should know people.
She found the registry and reached out for what?
Found the registry.
For
How
what?
How do you find a registry? That's impossible. That's
I
literally
don't know.
Impossible. It's hard to find one you want to find.
That's It's like, you know, like in like 12-step, they say, you know, when you make amends, the only caveat is don't make amends to somebody if it's just going to make you feel better and further hurt them. Like, there's no reason. There's literally no reason on earth that she should have done that. That would have been a good reason.
Yeah, what was that story?
Well, what happened, what I picked up on was I think she had been, she was significantly younger than me. She was about 10 years younger than me,
bro.
And I think was far more into the, thought the situation, I think, was a little more than what I thought it was on its face when it happened. And I think she had kind of periodically, been Googling me and things like that because, the timing was very precarious. We put things together fairly quickly, and then it wasn't more than a couple of weeks after the registry was up that this all happened. So that's the only thing I can think of. I don't know. I'm not super present on social media, so I don't know if that was used in any way. But
how? Wait. Hold on a second. Just because it's painful. How did she reach out to your ex-fiancé, and then how did your ex-fiancé tell you what she knew?
So she reached out. I believe she somehow got her. She somehow got her cell phone number. She reached out via text, and my ex actually thought that it was one of our vendors or something because it was a number she didn't have programmed in her phone, and she was making reference to our wedding in the text message. And I just happened to actually be calling my ex during the day because I was trying to consolidate our car insurance plans needed her VIN number and she said, hey, she was acting very funny on the phone. And then she said, do you know, and then said this person's name. And I said, my stomach dropped. And I just said, where are you? Let's talk. And at that point, I don't think she had really had much communication, but she was kind of looking for information from me. And, we're weeks out from the wedding, so it's, kind of high intensity time as far as planning goes. But then when I went to articulate, what happened, I tried to be as vague as I could, being that it was, long in the past and tried to, just keep that at the front of things. It was before we ever got engaged, and, it wasn't, something that was still going on or present or anything like that. I just wasn't giving her enough detailed information. So she was obviously really upset and kind of freaking out, but
details don't help.
Did she reach out to the girl to get all the details filled in?
So exactly. So since I wasn't giving her kind of enough of the details, she reached out to the girl, and they apparently had a phone conversation, and then text messages were forwarded from screenshots from years before, and without context of timelines, it looked like it had been going on for quite some time when it started as a platonic thing and then changed. So. So it was pretty rough. It was pretty rough.
All right. But this is, how long ago did this happen?
So this is actually just before COVID. This was in August of 2019 is when all of this went down. Yeah.
Your guy, you don't have difficulty betting young chicks. So now you're free to do it all above the board, And you're going to be up on stage with me coming up, Friday night, late show?
Doesn't help bed checks, trust me.
Good night, Comedy Club. I think still a couple tickets around. So, all right. You dating? Seeing anyone new?
Well, I didn't date at all for roughly a year. Just kind of licked my wounds a little bit. And then COVID hit, which made dating more complicated. So I've just kind of, spent most of my time. I'd actually moved from D.C. to Raleigh during that time. So I just moved to Raleigh about a week ago. So,
Steve, quick personal spank bank question from a podcaster who cares. When you're going for the spank bank jack, theme. Do you pick the trollop who's 10 years your junior who ratted you out with the retro vengeance jack?
Strumpet. Mm-hmm.
Or do you have the remorseful, tearful fiancé jack?
I guess it depends on the mood you're in.
Or do we toggle back and forth?
It's definitely a toggle, but I would say I'm a little. I probably lean more towards the tearful one. Yeah.
Yeah. Sad. Interesting. Jim Croce wrote a song about it. Gina, you don't know, but there's a vengeful Jack.
I didn't realize that. I thought you want
a remorseful Jack, and there's a happy Jack.
I thought you'd want to like Eternal Sunshine, that girl from your mind.
That's a Who song. Happy Jack.
That's right. No, there's room.
Okay. I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, so somebody I have long since been with could still be.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, just did.
A wistful Jack?
I never thought of that.
Oh, yeah.
Happy Jack. What do you think it's about, Gina?
I guess I know now.
So just the occasional vengeance Jack, but not a theme.
Yeah, there's still a lot more animosity towards that individual than the other. The other, you know, she didn't do anything wrong.
I know. That's why you have to toggle back and forth between the happy Jack and the vengeful Jack. That's all.
Well, right.
Rules are
divorce
rules.
Dodged.
Mm-hmm. Divorce dodged.
Yep.
That's right. Still young.
Broken child.
In your 30s. Joining, didn't get anyone pregnant.
It's great. Mm-hmm.
Did not get the young girl pregnant.
No.
Maybe you take another shot at the young chick now. You circle back.
She's matured.
Yeah. She seems great, like a great partner.
It'd be an awkward wedding.
What about the one who dropped a dime on you?
That's her, right?
Yeah. There you go.
Go back and hit that again.
Yeah.
It'll be more nuanced than it was the first time.
There's more going on. More subtext.
All right, Steve. We're going to hug it out up on stage when I see you this weekend.
All right. I look forward to it.
Or tonight, right? Yeah.
That's all right.
Thanks, champ. Let's see. Let's see if I can power through these last two. Mark, 51, Colorado.
Hi, guy. That's about all I had. My tone doesn't go so high. Hi, Gigi. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Hey, buddy. What's your tale of woe, Mark?
Yeah, this is like, whoa, put on the brakes, whoa. I've been dating this girl for 2 years now. In fact, my first date was the last time you were in Golden.
Wow.
By the by. Mm-hmm. And then we went for this recent show as well. So you marked our 2-year anniversary. Thank you, sir, for coming out.
Thank you.
I was going to be your ball boy 2 years ago, but the hopper didn't show.
Mm.
Anyway, long All story, right. just reference. But so one of the reasons I started dating this lady is she didn't want kids because I have a few of my own, a couple of exes, a couple of, anyway.
Yeah, I collect interest.
But she's changed her mind and wants another baby. And I'm wondering, 51, I can't have children serially my whole life, can I?
Are you
would this be
singer?
A relationship deal breaker? Sorry.
How old is she?
Early 30s.
Well, first off, congratulations on being in your 50s and banging around with someone that's in their early 30s. That's not too shabby. I mean, you know.
Thank you, sir.
This comes with that territory, but if you're going to hook up with a chick who's, you know, almost 20 years younger than you, this is going to be one of those things that just goes along with that territory. Now, I'm going to make things better on a couple of fronts. If you found me a woman in her early 30s who was single or, you know, in a relationship and did not want kids, I don't trust that woman. That's its own category. That's its own thing. So
we should have talked 2 years ago.
Don't care.
She's healthy. And that she wants a kid.
Thanks,
and she's young enough to be able to have a kid. So you got those two things going. The other aspect of it is she just basically, she didn't change her mind. She just said one thing to not get you to flee. And now that you've been hanging around for a while and she's got her claws into you, she's really just saying what she felt and thought in the first place.
Shit. Yeah.
Also, she is, she's found you suitable enough and attractive enough and whatever enough to want you to sire a kid with her. So these are all kind of first world problems. These are all these are compliments. You guys living together?
Yeah, sir. We bought a house last year up in the mountains.
Could you surprise her with
renovating it?
Surprise her with a puppy and by yourself 18 months?
I checked that box already. The puppy will be a year old in November.
Oh,
how many kids do you have now?
I have a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old from a previous marriage, and a 26-year-old from a previous?
Wow.
Previous marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Grandkids. Sorry. Yeah.
Is this going to be a deal breaker for you? I mean, look, I know a lot of guys who got divorced, remarried, mm-hmm. thought, I'm never going to have it. And they had kids, and they're happy they had kids.
But will I be that 75-year-old dropping off their kid at kindergarten?
Who cares?
I mean,
those rules seem to have gone right out the window.
There's no more rules anymore. Botox fixed all that.
Yeah.
So I would kind of... So I think, A... She's healthy. She wants kids. B, she wants your kids. Yeah. She's really into you. And C, you don't have any problem shitting out kids. Let's just be one more. I say you go for it. And you'll be happy. And all the mistakes you made with the 26-year-old who hates your guts right now, you won't have that with this kid because now you're seasoned and mature.
Good point.
And wow, you already went the puppy route, so I'm out of ideas. Oh, by the way, Chris says your fiance's hot. He remembers them.
Yeah, long blonde.
This is uncomfortable.
You got a hot young chick.
Nice. Sorry?
You got a hot young chick with good genes and good bone structure.
Yeah, chin up.
Give her a kid.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
That was easy.
All right, don't pull out. All right, last one. Let's see. Down at the bottom, right?
Yeah.
Krista, 53. Everyone's from North Carolina. Good. You coming to the show?
I definitely am. I'm coming to both shows.
Oh, good.
I now have a new thing to complain about because I wanted to ask to pull your balls, and now you gave it to somebody else.
Well, that's all right.
I'm bummed out about that.
There's always the green room. An oversized sectional sofa and Mike eating chicken tenders next to us.
Shit, yeah!
There you go. All right, there we have it.
I talked to Mike today, by the way. He was jerky shopping.
Of course he was. You have a trip coming up.
He was
up.
Shopping for jerky for the road.
You see him eating chicken tenders. You don't see him. He can pound. He pounds cakes when you're on stage.
Cake?
Like, yeah, he just goes
plural?
Ham.
Cakes.
like he orders the whole dessert menu and he just pounds it all.
Great.
How is he not 400 pounds?
I don't know. He's active. He's got a good metabolism and he gets out and moves around a lot.
I think he saves it all for these trips.
That makes sense.
Krista, what's your problem?
So my original problem was that I am just over what is going on in this country. I can't take the Zoom meetings anymore. I have worked every single day in the office since this whole thing began, and I cannot take the fact that there are people who don't want to come back to the office. I can't take the fear. I can't even look at another thing, a hand sanitizer. I'm over it. If I see one more person driving in their car with a mask on by themselves, I'm going to lose my mind. I just don't understand how we're ever going to get through this as a country, and it's giving me the blues, Adam, I have to tell you.
Yeah, well, all right. I have the same thing. I was just talking to Drew about this. I'm on the eve of taking a bunch of commercial flights and can already hear everyone going nuts with the mask. And again, as we were discussing, interesting in that I've flown every 3 weeks for the last, since before COVID, I never broke it. We went from every 2 weeks to every 3 weeks or whatever. 1 year ago, when we were in the throes of the pandemic, on the airplanes, fast and loose with the mask. Now, with vaccinations, 0% of the people on the airplane were vaccinated when I flew a year ago.
Now, depending on where the flight leaves and where it's going, it's well over 50%, because think about the group that can fly.
Right.
You know what I mean? These are slightly more affluent people who can purchase the ticket. Yeah. They're online. They're savvy. They're whatever. They are going ballistic on airplanes with the mask now, much more than they were a year or a year and a half ago, which is, I'm trying to think of where the mandate came down
from. Playing a little catch up.
Either way.
It's a total lack of common sense. There's no common sense left in this country. It's ridiculous. And nobody has a motor. I hear you say that all the time.
Ugh.
I've worked since I was 16 years old. I got a job at McDonald's, Adam, on my 16th birthday. So that I could start working right away.
Way to celebrate.
And I have worked every single day since I was 16.
Well,
and nobody wants to work anymore.
Well, listen, here is the good news and the bright side of this. And when I was growing up, no one really talked about work or work ethic, because it was assumed you had to work.
Right.
Like everyone just worked.
Right.
You know, that's what it was. We talked about talents and gifts and training. Now you can essentially rise to the top by simply having a motor, something that everybody potentially could have, but less and less people do. So the good news is, do you have kids?
I do have kids. They're in their 20s.
You just got to get those lazy, ungrateful fucks to get a motor in them. And if they get a motor, they can be talentless and they can be everything and just go right to the top simply by, you know, by going Rudy.
What are you talking about?
That's right, son. You go Rudy on everyone's ass. Mm-hmm. You just outwork everybody. But now it's going to be like if Rudy got to start at quarterback.
He ended up in jail.
Exactly.
That's right.
Well, and my kids are fine, but people who were trying to find as employees, they just don't have a motor. Nobody wants to work anymore. I don't understand it. I just don't understand how people think that everything should be handed to them and they shouldn't have to put in the effort. It's just
they never put it that way. That's the problem.
Yeah.
They never go, I think everything should be handed to me and I shouldn't have to put in an effort. They start talking in terms of safety and disenfranchise and danger and blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
I don't know. Chris, I will say this. There's some like-minded folks like you and I, and we will meet this weekend at Goodnight's Comedy Club.
Excellent.
And we will commiserate together over a highball or two while Mike eats cake with his hands.
Cakes.
Cakes.
Face first.
Well, I'd be happy to shake your hand and then eat a peach.
Oh, sorry. Then eat a peach. All right. I got to give away some ultimate ears. I feel like Steve in the engagement from Raleigh.
Yeah.
I feel like
that's by far
Steve, are
compelling.
You still there? Steve, you're going to feel better because I'm giving you some ultimate ears.
Oh, excellent. Well, I feel better already.
All right. Let's play some, let's go out let's outro here. Here
we go. Feel better? Good. Thank you, Mr. Brightside.
Well, ultimate ears, everyone. We rely on technology so much these days. The earbuds. I never thought they'd be this big a part of my life, but they are ultimate ears. You can spend thousands of bucks for the high-end custom fit stuff, the real pro-level stuff. But the other stuff is kind of a one-size-fits-some, and you get a little irritation in the ear. UE fits, that's ultimate ears fits. True wireless custom fit earbuds from Ultimate Ears. Premium sound, all day comfort. Again, you can do it yourself. You used to have a tech come in, and I remember being fitted for an IFB a million years ago and other things, and they mold it, and they've got a guy comes in there with a chemistry degree.
Yeah, these are the best earbuds you can get. You do it all from home, and it's just some crazy light technology that molds these silicone buds here. They never fall out.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's another good angle. A guaranteed perfect fit in 60 seconds, 8 hours of continuous playback on single charge, and up to 20 hours with the charging case. And if you don't love them as much as I do, they offer a 30-day money-back guarantee plus free shipping, returns, and a one-year warranty. Right, Dawson?
For a limited time, get 15% off your pair of UE Fits True Wireless Earbuds at UE.com/fits. Just use promo code Adam at checkout. That's 15% off with promo code Adam at UE.com/FITS.
Well, our old friend Brian Whitman's going to come in. We'll do a little back sack, ass crack and back sack. Everyone's got their roles to play. And I want to hear what Whoopi Goldberg sounds like and Joy Behar. We'll talk to Brian Whitman right after this.